He presents a question without a clear-cut answer. But hopefully by the time... Yeah, hopefully by the time this year is over, we'll be able together to develop a few approaches. I'm sure it's discussed, I just haven't gotten a chance to research who discussed it. The Rambam in Hilchot Yisori HaTorah, Perek Shemini, very famous words where he describes what was the source of confidence in the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu. And ultimately, the degree of confidence that Klal Yisrael had in the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu would ultimately determine the degree of confidence that they had in the authenticity of the Torah's revelation. Because, with the exception of the package deal, Aseret HaDibros, where Hashem said it all, the Dibur Echad, and then repeated the Aseret HaDibros slowly, so to speak, where each word was heard audibly, so it was only after the first two Dibros, it was only the first two Dibros that Klal Yisrael directly heard. According to the Masor of Chazal, as recorded in the Gemara Makos, as derived from the Pasuk Torah Tzivolano Moshe, that Moshe taught us Torah, and Torah is the Gematria 611, because Moshe Rabbeinu was only necessary to give us 611 mitzvot, because the first two, Anochi and Lo Yilecha, and Piyah Gvura Shmanim. We heard it directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is well known, Rashi, and Chumash quotes it, discussed at length as to why dafka those two. And as Klal Yisrael come to Moshe Rabbeinu after hearing those first two Dibros, and they say, enough, this is too powerful, we can't take this prophecy, so we're not ready for this. But you'll bring down the Torah to us. We'll take your word for it. We have established a confidence in your prophecy, Lo'olam Vo'ed, and we no longer need to hear it directly, which seems to imply that the whole reason that they heard it directly to start out with was exactly to establish that confidence. Which seems to be what Moshe Rabbeinu responds to them in Parashas Yisro, where he tells them that, don't worry, this is exactly why Hashem did it. They should constantly fear God, you shouldn't sin, which presumably means two things. Number one, the awesome experience of encountering Hashem itself would inspire them not to sin. And number two, the fact that they encountered the Dvar Hashem directly, so they wouldn't have a doubt on any of the mitzvahs that were going to be given them later. What emerges then is that, except for the first two, the rest of the Aseret HaDibros with its full clarity, together with the rest of the Tariq mitzvahs, which were given over both at Har Sinai and throughout the Midbar, in the Mishkan, which was in the continuation, as the Ramban indicates, at the beginning of Parashat Shmos of Har Sinai, where Moshe Rabbeinu Vayikra Hashem Moshe Omoed Leimor, Parashat Vayikra begins with, and other parashas as well, and Moshe Rabbeinu is getting Torah from the Ohel Moed, which is the extension of Har Sinai. So most of the divinity of Torah, most of the confidence that Torah was true, hinged on the confidence in Moshe Rabbeinu as a true prophet. So it's very important to establish him as a true prophet, because otherwise the whole religion falls down the drain. If Moshe Rabbeinu would lie, so to speak, Khalil to Klal Yisrael, so then that mitzvah would be immediately suspect. So Ramban devotes an entire chapter, pretty much, to the analysis of how Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was established. And he writes, Moshe Rabbeinu lo aminu bo Yisrael lifnei oso she'osa. Moshe Rabbeinu, Klal Yisrael, did not believe in him because of the miracles that he did, which probably would have been the standard answer that a person would have given. Moshe Rabbeinu, how could you doubt his prophecy? The Pasuk in Chumash, aminu b'Hashem of Moshe Avdo, when? At Kriyas Yamsuf, splitting of the sea, aminu b'Hashem, Moshe Avdo. So one would not be faulted for attributing the confidence in Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy to the miracles, because the Torah itself seems to indicate. The Rambam continues, Shamam and Alpia also says, believe Dofi. Somebody believes solely based on miracles. He adds within his heart, Dofi. Not exactly sure how to translate Dofi. It has something to do with doubt. Maybe they're etymologically related. Dao, P. doubt. Okay. Anyway, either way, it means some kind of doubt. She'efshar she'yaseh ha'os belot v'kishif. Maybe the miracle was done with black magic, white magic, sleight of hand, or whatever you're going to call it. The Rambam himself denied the existence of black magic. So probably by lot of kishuv, he means a sleight of hand. He went to graduate school, David Copperfield, and did miracles. He continues to explain that all the miracles that Moshe did, of course, not himself, through Hashem Yisbarach, he was the agent to bring them about. They were not to bring a proof for his prophecy, lo lahavi ra'al nevua, but rather were for individual purposes, where Hashem instructed him to perform a miracle, or sometimes he himself had a confidence that Hashem would help him in doing the miracle for a specific purpose. He had to drown the Egyptians, so he split the sea, and he drowned them in it. Of course, the he is really a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but he was the agent. We needed food in the desert, so he brought down man for us. We needed drink, water, so he split the hit the rock. Originally, he spoke to the rock. Different episodes. Adas Korach started up with him, so he caused the earth to. Of course, again, I use the term cause, meaning he was the shliach Hashem. But here, he had a confidence that Hashem would back him up on this one. That and the earth miraculously swallowed up Korach and his.
Hashem tell him that he was going to do that? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu decided how he was going to die.
He had an if-then clause. He said, "In bria, if there is a bria here already, mishayshes may bracious that this is the old divine will that this should occur from mishayshes may bracious then." Then he'll be swallowed up by that old hole, and not Yivra Hashem. I know he had a confidence that Hashem's not going to allow the whole Torah to go down the drain, like Eliyahu Bar Carmel. He didn't have a nevuah directly that Hashem was going to send down the fire. He had a confidence that by the great tzaddikim that Hashem's not going to let them down, so to speak. Otherwise, the whole Torah will go down the drain. Because Korach was questioning Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy also. Who are you to be the main prophet? Just continuing. And so on and so forth concerning the other miracles the Rambam writes. Why do they believe in Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy? The Mamar Har Sinai. Sheinenu rov lo zar vaznenu shamu v'lo acher. I think he's quoting a pasuk in Tanakh. Our eyes saw it, not the eyes of a stranger. Our ears heard it, not the ears of another. Ha'esh v'akolot v'lapidim. And he proceeds to describe based on the pasukim themselves in Parashat Yisro. Panim v'panim dibra Hashem imachem. It's actually a pasuk later. That Hashem spoke to you directly. Think that this is the language Hashem uses for Moshe Rabbeinu. B'panim, b'panim. But Klal Yisrael also had panim, b'panim for the first few mitzvos. And also, as he quotes in the Psukim, that Hashem tells him, I'm going to come to you in a cloud. Bavur yishma ha'om b'davri imach v'gam b'cha yaminu le'olam. So the Meshech Chacham elaborates this Rambam. He says there's one extra word that didn't appear in Kriyas Yamsuf. Yaminu b'Hashem of Moshe Avda, but doesn't say le'olam. Doesn't say eternally. But here at Har Sinai, when they're going to hear me calling you, Moshe, come up. I got to give you a Torah over here. Plus the first two Dibros. So then Yaminu Bechol Olam. Very interesting. We speak about this belief in Moshe. We believe in the Rabbanu Shalom. It means belief in Moshe. It's prophecy because it was through Moshe we got the Torah. We got Torah is Moshe. For a reason. Because the overwhelming majority of Torah, 99.9% pretty much, and work out the math, the ratio between 2 and 613, really came through Moshe. Miklal, shekodem davar ze lo aminu bo ne'emanus shiyomedes lo'olam. That before this episode, they didn't believe in him with a confidence that would last forever. Elo ne'emanus shiyesh acharei ahirhu machshava. Only a believability that has leaves room to ruminate over it and perhaps doubt it. Then the Rambam continues to point out how this very central principle not only establishes the confidence in Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy directly, but also establishes for all time a confidence in the immutability of Torah. Because if the Torah were to change, Chalila, there would be a need to give us as much confidence that that's the Dvar Hashem. And even though it was the position of the Rambam directly, that there never will be another Har Sinai. Hashem will never reveal himself in public to change the Torah. That's one of the animamim. But the Rambam writes that you could logically prove the fact that the Torah wouldn't change absent a Har Sinai. Because here, if another prophet is going to say, I have a new Torah for you, as has happened at least 2 points in history, so the immediate answer is that, listen, your standard of evidence is based on whatever you're trying to plug into some idea of establishing your confidence as a prophecy, as a prophet, excuse me. But Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy we established because we ourselves were there and heard Hashem's voice call out, which they explained, means prophecy. We ourselves were prophets, that Moshe Rabbeinu was a prophet. So now you want to prove yourself as a prophet through some other means and then say you have a new Torah. The standards of evidence are not even. It gives a muscle that, you know, a judge is not going to judge a criminal to be guilty if he himself knows that he's innocent. If he has a standard of evidence based on his own eyesight, so he's not going to listen to witnesses. So too, if we have a confidence in the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu based on our own first-hand experience, so you're not going to listen to prophets who come through a lower means of proof to change the Torah. The Rambam does not explain. It doesn't, very interesting, he doesn't take the time out to explain that we weren't at Har Sinai, the generation that he's talking to. So presumably he means to plug into what the Ramban HaChumash, who presents a very similar analysis in his one of the Sheish Vechiros, where it says Yishom Lachot and Tishkach Advar Masharo Einecha Yom Asher Amarat Olafnei Hashem Ugecha B'choreg. Don't never forget Har Sinai. So the Ramban writes that's a specific mitzvah of the Torah, it's a negative commandment that you're not allowed to forget Har Sinai. What do you mean not allowed to forget Har Sinai? You have to keep the Torah. What's a seventh mitzvah? It says never forget why you believe and what you believe in terms of Torah Hashem, because you are all at Har Sinai. So then the Ramban fills in the missing line that when you transmit it generation to generation, we have a confidence that that at least comes very close to, if not being identical to, actually being there. And he gives the famous analogy of the famous axiological statement, you don't listen to our Soloveitchik too much, you mix up your logicals. The ontological reality that fathers don't lie to their children. So you have to answer this to mean that all the religious fathers in whatever religion, they don't lie to their children. But what are they not lying about? They're not lying about the fact that they have a tradition that the religion is true. But the tradition begins at the prophet telling them that I'm telling you the truth. But in other words, let's say you pick a Christian. So he's telling his children that my father told me, my priest told me, his priest told him that what? They're not lying. They're not lying about what? That they heard from someone that our religion is true. They're not lying about that. It's a fact that they heard it. But whereas in the Jewish religion, you apply that same argument, we're not lying that our ancestors said it at Har Sinai. So that's the difference in power of the argument. It's only as good as is your root. So you want to change your whole lifestyle based on one person coming to you and saying that he's a prophet, okay, so be it. But our confidence in our religion is based on a confidence of all of our Bubba's ages being at Har Sinai. And that chain beginning, that Abba lo meshaka lebro, that the father doesn't lie to the children, that fact, meaning that all of our ancestors were at Har Sinai, is a true fact. So the Ramban doesn't spell that out. The Rambam doesn't spell it out, but the Ramban does. Presumably the Rambam would have to agree to that. Otherwise, there's a flaw in the argument here. What I want to discuss today, well, 10 minutes of setup, but it's an important setup. There is a Sefer called the Sefer Abris. We quoted, I think, in the past in a different forum by Rav Pinchas Mivilna. I don't know anything else about him, other than the fact that Povisham, he gets involved in controversy, so to speak. It's a very beautiful Sefer that was the first attempt at trying to show through the whole winds of change that occurred in the 19th century with more and more Jews going to university and scientific development going at a rapid pace, to show that this is not a contradiction to our religion. It all works out. And therefore he took the pains to translate into Hebrew. He writes, for some reason he decided to write in Hebrew rather than Yiddish, which would have been more popularly understood, many, many scientific works to show that this is all chokhmas haboreh, that all science is just a description of the divine wisdom. And one need not feel threatened, that this is like a different way of viewing the world, the winds of change, etc. There's a few interesting statements that he quoted Povisham and a apparently in 19th century it was a very popular work. It was made into many, many Jewish homes. One is has to do with the bug issue, Kovpar. Because he has a very machmashita on that. Most Boston Goldie approach that anything you could see in a microscope is irrelevant in that law. But he says, no, now that you see the microscope, so you got to take care of it. It happens to be, you go to some of the rabbinic literature on this topic, so they quote the Sefer Bris, and most of them say that he's wrong. But the main thrust of the Sefer Bris is, as I mentioned, to be makariv, all of the wisdoms together, to show that it's all part of the Ribbono Shel Olam wisdom. But he has a fascinating analysis of Inyan Emunah, in which he attacks the Rambam and not this Rambam, and the Chavos Lubavitch, and those who took the philosophical approach to Emunah. He says that was, he proves from a variety of sources that was not the way to go. We spoke about this in the past, that the traditional approach is self-sufficient, and the approach they took he felt was a very dangerous one, and he tries to prove it, and so on and so forth. But when we deal with this Rambam, so he presents the following quandary. The Rambam says the belief in miracles, yesh belibo dofi, that it's going to lead to doubt. So we might as well not have a holiday of Pesach. The holiday of Pesach stresses time and time again the Oisus and the Moisin, and that's the way we came to Orimuna. The Ramban in Parashas Bo, a very famous analysis which we discussed on a different occasion, where he writes that there were so many heresies in the world, and they were all shattered to smithereens by the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Those who denied God can no longer deny Him. Those who denied the fact that Hashem knows what's going on in the world can no longer do so, because He intervened in the world. Those who thought that He knows but doesn't intervene also had to cave in. Even Paro, leaving aside the fact that it didn't last, but you're right, Hashem HaTzadik and Him HaYarashayim, He had to cave in. Originally He said, Mi Hashem HaShem HaBakolo V'gam Es Yisrael Ibrahim, has to go, V'gam Yisrael HaShalech, I'm not going to submit. I have my own viewpoint of the world. I created the Nile River. I'm God. And ultimately, he had to cave in. Certainly, Klal Yisrael were implanted within them, as described in Parshas Bo. L'man shisio sosai l'bikirbo, l'man tisaper v'azni bincha v'bincha, eitha sher salalti Mitzrayim. You should tell your children that which I wreaked havoc in Mitzrayim, and they should inspire confidence in Emunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the Haggadah, time and time again, we are highlighting how central the Makos war. Yisino Hashem Mitzrayim, Leidei Malach, Leidei Sarav, Leidei Shliach, Lekosh Baruch Hu, Chodei Matzva, etc. Yad Chazoka, Zeh Adever, Zeroi Nitzu Yazah Cherev, referring to Makos Bechoros. Oso, Zeh Hamate, Mosim, Zeh Adam, Davracher, Yad Chazoka Shtayim, Zeh Nitzu Shtayim, Eilu, Esa Makos, Yad Gosh Baruch Hu, Mitzrayim. The Haggadah seems to indicate that it's much more than just, you know, zetches on the Egyptians. These were approaches to how we arrived at Emunah. Moshe Rabbeinu is constantly confronting Paro and saying, Bavur zeh, teida, ki ani Hashem mikarav haaretz, in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now you'll realize that I exist and I'm involved in the world. So the truth is, I misplaced the Sefer Bris, so amongst other reasons, I was not able to review his answer to this question about how to deal with this Rambam. But I don't know whether he says this or not, but I hope he does. But I think the correct shot in the Rambam is as follows. Shehamam min alpia ha'otzos, yesh belibo dofi, she'ef she'she yose ha'os belot v'kishuv. You could read the Rambam in two ways. One who believes in miracles has doubt, because it could be that the miracle occurred through witchcraft or through sleight of hand. Or you could read it as follows. One who believes in miracles has a doubt that the miracle might have occurred through sleight of hand. What's the difference between those two? Is it a reasonable doubt or is it not a reasonable doubt? So, although someone pointed out to me, Ibn Ezra does not interpret the Pesukim this way, but the simple interpretation of the Pesukim in Makas Kinim is where you have that Hashem is brought about a progression. He brings about Makas Dam, and the Chartumim could do it too. He brings about Makas Svardeya, and the Chartumim could do it too. And then he brings them to Makas Kinim, and they can't. And then they say Etzba Lakimi. So the Ibn Ezra interprets that to mean this is a natural law. It doesn't seem to fit well with the Pesukim. I think I should look it up inside, but I mention it as a foil to say that's not the standard shot. Etzba Lakimi is normally interpreted to mean that here the Khartoum are saying, well, we can't do it. So we cave in. This is Etzba Lakim. This is an act of Hashem Yisbarach. So why did Hashem bother bringing the first two Makos if this was, so quote-unquote child's play? Why did he bother telling Moshe to throw down the stick and become a snake and the others did the same thing? Hashem can't do better miracles that will not be copyable by the Chartumim. So perhaps the answer is that, and then Ramban says this even about Kriyas Yamsuf, that there's always going to be room for Bechira Choshes. So you'll always be able to undo the Maka. But is it a reasonable undoing of the Maka? Or is it, as you know, the popular expression became a Sefer on Amunah recently, I don't know how to put it out, but it seems very interesting. Beyond a reasonable doubt. In other words, Hashem is going to allow you to have Bechira, because otherwise you're going to be a robot. But has he succeeded in proving that which you are supposed to believe in beyond a reasonable doubt, so that your leap of faith is, as we say, there's an expression, what do they call it? Quantum leap. It's an expression that sometimes means a large leap. But those, a little bit of the science, quantum leap, we're talking about a leap of a few microns, right? Or less. So it's going to make a quantum leap of Amunah. So you'll be able to get schar for that as well. But now it's going to jump across the Grand Canyon. So here, the Khartoumim are forced to cave in at Makas Kinim. But even before you got to Makas Kinim, what did they do already? That they converted the water to blood. What did they do? They converted the Nile to blood. That was already taken. Did they have the power to convert the Nile to blood? I think it's fair to assume probably not. They probably got some water. I guess they bought them from the Jews, or they dug well water, or wherever they got the water. And they converted to blood. A few cups. Ah, see? Witchcraft. Witchcraft. The whole Nile River and the whole region of Mitzrayim was converted into blood. That's what you did? Yeah, I know you did. The frogs. The frogs are brought. They overran all of Egypt. What did the Khartoumim do? How many frogs did they bring up? Again, this is a somewhat conjecture. The forces don't really elaborate on this, but you get the impression they didn't bring another Makkah. So in terms of sheer degree, there was enough to move beyond a reasonable doubt. This is not sleight of hand. But still, that's the way Hashem Yisbarach had gradual. And then eventually came Kenan, where they couldn't even do it to start out with. Then the Makos increased in progression and in terms of wonder, and culminating at a shattering of all of the rules of probability. People do die across time, right? But they don't all die at the same second. Males don't all die at the same second. Firstborn don't all die at the same second. So if you want to draw a probability chart on all the firstborn of Egypt dying at the same second, that was predicted by Moshe Rabbeinu. So whatever, you could probably use some mathematics and you'll say it's one in a billion, zillion, 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 zillion. Well, but it is one in a billion, zillion, zillion.
Right.
That happens. So it's like winning the lottery every day of your life if you live to the age of Mr. Shelach, right? But you can write a mathematical formula for that, but that's beyond a reasonable doubt. Someone told me there's a technical term about this in mathematics, that when things are so improbable, In any view of the world, we treat that as zero, because that's, otherwise we can't function. We can't develop. Ken Zogan Fakert. You can only say the opposite if it's the reasonable opposite. So I think that maybe that's what the Rambam is driving at. That Hashem Yisbarach wanted the confidence in the Torah min Hashemayim, because in Mitzrayim all Hashem proved was His existence. He didn't prove Torah yet. He set it up because now He established a. Somewhat of a confidence in Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy, so that eventually it would be even more. But he didn't give over Torah yet. But Torah Min Shemayim, the constitution that we're going to live throughout our whole lives, that he wanted 100%. Not even the beyond the reasonable doubt that the Makos would allow an unreasonable doubt. It's unreasonable. Yesh b'libo dofi. There's no one who could do that through Lot and Kishuv. This is clearly the creator of the world who's now making silly putty out of the rules of nature, because he programmed them to start out with. But still, yesh b'libo dofi. And as is evidenced by the behavior of the Chartoumim, in the first two Makos, and with the Nachash, they tried to dismiss it. But they realized they couldn't. Deep down, they realized it wasn't sleight of hand. But you could always try to dismiss it. And of course, that's one approach to power hardening his heart. That he kept dismissing it. He kept indicating that, yeah, it looks good, but, you know, I do have magicians, so Moshe is a greater magician. And finally, he caved in. So again, I think that the Rambam's not Chas V'Shalom. I think half the religion's gonna go going to, well, not half the religion, but at least one holiday, as well as the Zechirat Yisrael, which is so focal to our religion because of the way the Rambam explains, because it basically implanted Emunah in a Kodesh Baruch Hu for all generations. I don't think the Rambam's trying to minimize the effect of miracles. I think it's just pointing out that Hashem wanted the Torah to be with an even greater confidence, even though the miracles themselves establish beyond a reasonable doubt, way beyond a reasonable doubt, of the truth that were supposed to be developed at that point and displayed to the world, namely Hashem's existence, His knowledge of the world, and Hashgacha, that He intervenes in the world, which is of course very crucial. So what I wanted to just end off with, and time is late and people are very rushed today, myself included. So how come you see it in Shem was necessary? Just go to the original, go to the higher form right away. Go to Har Sinai, zap all the Egyptians, you know, freeze them. All the Jews will go out, go to Har Sinai. And then Hashem Yisbach will reveal Himself to us and say, Klal Yisrael, I'm here, I'm alive and well. I created the world, I took you out of Mitzrayim, and here's the Torah. Why the need to first have a series of Makos that would allow for an unreasonable doubt, but nonetheless some kind of doubt, and then cap it off with Har Sinai?
Can I go back to Bris Bain of Sarim?
I'm sorry?
Can I go back to Bris Bain of Sarim? When Avinu was told by Hashem that the nation that oppressed you, I'll don't know if you.
Yeah, so Hashem could have killed them all in 1 second.
Yeah.
He could have torched them in one Makkah. No, you know, the very long Chazal thing took a whole year. Progression of the Makos was this show that was going on. Moshe was going to Paro and saying,
what?
You're
going
to submit that Hashem exists in the world, not just to punish them. If it was just to punish the Egyptians, then Hashem could have brought it about in a much quicker way. So this is the question that I'd like to explore, and by explore I don't mean for the next half hour, we're out of time, and I don't have anything to say. I just have conjecture. But I just wanted to propose, wanted to approach this in the food for thought, how come Hashem is brought it about in that way? With first Pesach and then Shavuos. Obviously there's a progression, but why not go straight? So this is something I'm teaching actually in Stern College and a little bit uptown also. So I threw it out to the students. So I just wanted to share with you a few approaches that were developed by the students, and that's food for thought. People get back to me if they see other makoros as to why it was developed this way. One is the gradual approach. You can't wake someone up from a slumber, a spiritual slumber, and say, okay, I'm the Ribbono Shel Olam, here's your Torah. The way human beings are, you know, they did die from that experience, according to the Midrashim. But if it would have been from zero, they would have died a million deaths. You can't. That's not the way human beings are. You have to get them used to what they're about to encounter. So first, in a more not less dramatic, it was very dramatic and it was very convincing. But it wasn't this direct nevuah to all of Klal Yisrael, which they weren't ready for. So Hashem starts gradually, gives them a solid evidence, and if you look carefully in the Agada, it wasn't just Makos, because the Agada speaks about Gilui Shechina. Rabbi Landis spoke about this yesterday in the Shabbos Gadol Drasha, where the Hashem Shechina appeared to each and every member of Klal Yisrael. Now, exactly what the nature of that revelation was, you get the impression it wasn't prophetic. It was more Derech Layera Elav Hashem Be'ilanei Mamre, where there was no prophecy, he just visited him. They sensed the divine presence with them. The Agada indicates Meir Gadol Zeh Gilui Shechina, which occurred at Makas Bechoros, that besides the Bechorim dying, there was also Hashem's presence being in Mitzrayim. So it wasn't just Makos. But nonetheless, this was a more gradual approach to what would eventually be at Har Sinai, where it would be direct revelation b'nevuah, where the Sefer Karim writes that for a moment in history, all of Klal Yisrael rise to the level of prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the same is true at Kriyas Yamsuf, where the Midrashim elaborated that at length, that there was Gilui Shechina. And there also they had a mini nevuah, which allowed them to be able to sing the Yod Yashir all at once. But there was this gradual process, not having the highest level right away of Anochi and Lo Yilecha. But there was another idea that both uptown and downtown, a student of mine I learned with said this on his own, and also someone in Stern College said this. I throw this out for study to see whether maybe this is the pshat as well. Because part of what Yetzias Mitzrayim demonstrated, as we say, I just saw recently in the one of the Mefarshim notes on the second bracha of Kriya Shema, Ava Rabba Aftanu, Chemla Gedola Viseira Chamalta Aleinu, that you had great compassion to us. What does that reference? The fact that we were not only created, that which Hashem did to all the nations of the world, but He created us as the Am Segula. He made us a special nation. Chemla Gedola Viseira Chamalta Aleinu, an extra dose of Chemla, that you even called us Bonim Lamakum. So perhaps what Yetzias Mitzrayim did for Klal Yisrael, that Matan Torah did not, is that Matan Torah demonstrated with absolute certainty that the Ribbono Shel Olam exists and He's giving a Torah, because all that's included. If Hashem reveals Himself to you, then you know that He exists. But what it didn't demonstrate, necessarily, or in the same way, is this tremendous Ahavas Hashem. Because on the one hand it did, because on a deep plane, the Torah is the greatest gift to mankind, but the average Jew didn't necessarily realize it at that point. But what happened at Yetzias Mitzrayim? He had a nation that was being tortured for over 100 years. I say over 100 because there are different shittos about exactly how many years they actually worked. And their children are being thrown into the Nile and being thrown into the brick walls. And they're being tortured and beaten and killed. And it seems like no one really cares. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam intervenes to take nakama against their oppressors, but not only in a simple way, in this dramatic way where He changed all the laws of nature, and each Jew is now saying, for me, because Hashem cares about me. That was the suggestion that in addition to the, shall we say, the theological proof that Yetzias Mitzrayim developed, that it implanted emunah, but it also implanted emunah in Hashgacha, but not just emunah in Hashgacha, also the emotional connection to Hashgacha. The fact that Hashem is Baruch is willing to overturn the laws of nature because He cares about Klal Yisrael. And that's another message that emerged dafka from Yetzias Mitzrayim, demonstrating the Ava Rabba between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. And of course, that's one of the main reasons that we read Shir HaShirim on Pesach. Because the Yetzias Mitzrayim, Ashcheni Yacharecha Nerutza, that Hashem is Baruch came to turn over the whole world in order to get His beloved out of the nation of Mitzrayim. And of course, with all of the, as some Rabbanim like to say, the reliving of the Shiva Mitzrayim by preparing the house and the Bdikas Chametz and cleaning the car, etc. And as you sit down to the Seder, but you realize that this is all an aspect of immense, immense divine Ahava that He chose us from all the other nations to take us out of Mitzrayim in this dramatic way and to crown it with the giving of the Torah 50 days later at Har Sinai at the Chag of Shavuos.
אנחנו נאמר כאן שאומר לא סוכר שבוע